First of all, some international events. We're watching developments in Syria, of course, with the death of the deputy defense minister and brother-in-law of the leader there, and other key members of the government security administration. Things are changing daily there.
Yeah, this is very much a developing story. The deaths yesterday were big news, significant news, I think. It looks to me like that the circle is tightening around the dictator there, and my guess is his days are numbered. It's hard to know exactly what that means, but it looks like he is basically losing control of that country. I think in a lot of ways that's good news, because most people recognize that he's a net negative in the Mideast, that there are lots of problems with his regime. He's very oppressive. He has these alliances with countries like Syria, with countries like Iran and other places that aren't very good and very constructive. But the downside of this is it creates a huge question mark about what's next for Syria. There is no guarantee that you end up with anything better there. You could theoretically end up with something worse. You could end up with a very unstable situation. You could end up with like a prolonged civil war. I mean, there's just a lot of unknowns about that, and one reason is he's been very oppressive in any kind of rival or any kind of leader who might naturally emerge right now. But that person is unknown. If they're in the country, if they're still alive, that person, we just don't know who that would be or what that would look like. And you know, we just don't have any guarantees that this is going to turn out any better in the long run, but I do think people agree that it's time for him to go.
Yeah, and this is just the latest, of course, in a series of revolutions in the region there. And, there's always concern about who the next government or what the next government will be. We've got a new government in Egypt to deal with now, and that's a little tricky in our ongoing relationship with Israel to maintain as well in the region.
I think very much so, and I think Egypt is a big question mark. You know, it sounds like Libya, it looks like it's, you know, people are fairly pleased with where that is today. That could always change. But you even look at something like Iraq. I mean, as much as we've invested in Iraq, not just with our money, but with the loss of American life and all the hardship we went through in Iraq, you know, there's no guarantee that in, say, 5 years, Iraq is going to be, you know, any shining light over there. So, it's a hard neighborhood to operate in. There's no doubt about that. It's a very difficult place. There's lots of history and lots of reality that you just have to acknowledge over there. But Syria is a country that for a long, long time has been, in my view, a negative force in the region. It's changed a little bit over time, and I think the country to watch, by the way, in the Mideast right now is Turkey. I think Turkey is going to emerge as much more of the regional leader than they have been in the past because of this sort of shakeup. Turkey's remains stable, and Turkey actually has very good relations with the West and also with the Mideast, so that they've kind of been able to maintain that sort of bridge capacity where they're a bridge between the two worlds. And so, we'll just have to see how that develops and see where that leads us over the next few years.
Yeah, and I saw the president had named ambassadors actually to Afghanistan and Pakistan. These diplomats are going to have the work cut out for them as violence continues in that region.
You know, there's no doubt. You look at Afghanistan. In fact, I have one of my employees in Little Rock who yesterday was his last day in our office for about a year because he's being deployed to Afghanistan with the Arkansas National Guard. So that is still, you know, very active, even though there's been a drawdown and all the things that are going on there. But you're right, that those countries right in that region, Afghanistan, Pakistan, you know, and other countries right in that area, they just have a history of turmoil. They're very tribal. They're not very Western. They're not very Western friendly. They don't seem to strive for a better future for their people. I mean, there's just a lot going on there. So you're right. Our diplomatic corps is going to have the work cut out for them. And what you hope for is you hope for stability, but you really do want those countries to have a meaningful upgrade in things like human rights and economic opportunity. And, you know, you just want them to take a nice step toward the modern world. And a lot of those countries, that's just really hard for them to do.
Of course, here at home, we have a nation going into an election divided over ideologies, bombarded by opposing messages in the media, and a lot of people are just weary of the partisan politics. It seems like you've either got people who are very passionate or people who just don't care and don't want anything to do with it. How does this bode going into the election for America?
Well, I'm very concerned about our political culture right now. It doesn't have to be this way. I've been up here almost 10 years now, and I'm not really a left-right kind of politician. I know our system works. I know it works very, very well if we let it work, and we're not letting it work right now. And I think it would be naive to say that the super PACs started all this, because they didn't. This has been something that's been developing over the last couple of decades. But from my standpoint, you know, politics is just getting worse and worse, in the sense that the ugliness of it, the mean-spiritedness of it, but also the problem is it's producing a lot of politicians who just aren't serious about tackling the major challenges that this country faces. So you get a lot of people up here that love to have press conferences. They love to point fingers. They play the blame game very, very well, but they're not offering any solutions, and they're not willing to make the hard decisions to get this country where it needs to be. And so I'm very concerned about it from that standpoint. But, you know, the good news is, and this is something I hope your listeners will think about, there's nothing wrong with Washington that we can't fix. It's all completely fixable. It's just a matter of political will. And if we have the will to do this, to show the right kind of leadership, to show a little bit of wisdom and courage right now, we can have an extremely bright future for this country. But if we let our politics limit us and limit our ability to face the future, the future of this country is not going to be as bright, and I think that's just reality of it. So we need to get our act together in Washington. I've been trying to do everything I possibly can up here in a very bipartisan way, and I think that's the only way you really get it done and you really make a difference up here long term, is to be very bipartisan or nonpartisan and just think about the next generation, not so much the next election.
What's so strange to me this year in this particular, in the presidential election, is you've got candidates for both of the major political parties going up against each other, and even some of the members of those parties don't seem too thrilled by their own candidates.
Oh, I think that's true, and I think that part of this is that our system right now, the way it currently operates, it's not the fundamental system that the Founding Fathers set up. It's really this new and relatively new political system we have now, with, you know, the big money and just all the things that are going on, all the hustle and bustle in the whole campaign world right now. What it's doing is it's producing more and more strident, sort of hard right, hard left politicians, and it's not producing the real problem solvers and those folks who are really going out to get those solutions that the country needs. So if you look at the U.S. House, for example, it is really very dysfunctional right now. It is basically a one-party chamber, and the one party dominates everything right now. All the decisions are made over there by just a small number of people. That's not democracy. And from my standpoint, that's not what the Founding Fathers had in mind. That's the way they're running it, and I think that's, you know, detrimental to the system. But back to your question, what happens is, because you have all this kind of strife and this division and this bitterness, you actually have a lot of that within each of the two major parties too. Because, you know, the it's kind of like the moderate, it's like in the Republicans, it's the conservatives versus the really hard right conservatives, and in the Democratic Party it's more the moderates versus the liberals. And so, you know, there's just a lot of turmoil all the way around, and hopefully after this election it'll settle down and things will, you know, fall into place. We'll be able to get stuff done.
There are a lot of people on both sides that are very concerned about the implications of the Citizens United decision and all the money that's going in. You mentioned the super PACs. How do you deal with that? We have the reality that this has been ruled that it's okay to do, so how do you deal with that? A lot of people, you know, want to change that situation in some way.
I think there's two things. First is the immediate. The Congress right now, if they wanted to, they could pass a law. We just offered something they call the Disclose Act, and it's gone down. But if for some reason we can't pass Disclose, we ought to be able to pass something that today will generate more transparency. And that's one of the real problems with super PACs. Not only is it a huge amount of money, but it's also secret money. They don't have to disclose it. That's a horrible combination when it comes to politics. When you have a lot of money and it's secret money, that's really bad. So if we can at least take care of the disclosure part, where it's more transparent, where people have to report where the money's coming from and who's giving it and all that, that'll help. That'll be a step. But in the larger picture, basically right now, I'm hoping, I don't want to criticize the Supreme Court, but I'm hoping that after the 2012 election, the Supreme Court will look at the impact that Citizens United has had on the electoral system here, and I hope they'll revisit it, and I hope they'll come up with some better rules and some limitations. To me, this is not about free speech. First, I don't think a corporation has that inalienable right of free speech. God didn't create those corporations. We created corporations, and we ought to be able to limit and structure those rights and, you know, what they can do and they can't do. I mean, you know, that's okay, but they don't have the fundamental right to free speech. I just really disagree with how the U.S. Supreme Court has decided that case. But again, I don't want to criticize. I hope what they do is they revisit it after 2012, and I hope they get it straightened out so we never see this again.
Now, in Congress, there are issues that keep coming back around. In the House, legislation has been introduced that would do things like end the AmeriCorps program, cut off federal funding to NPR and public TV and numerous other programs. This legislation is not expected to go very far, but it never really goes away.
It doesn't really go away, unfortunately, and it won't go very far as long as the Senate is Democratic, you know, quite honestly, and the Senate's going to stop that from getting enacted. Basically, look, we are in a terrible budget situation. We need to cut our spending. Everybody agrees on that. But here's what we need to remember. We've already been cutting our spending. We have cut spending. So when you look at some of those programs you're talking about, you know, education, you know, some of the public broadcast stuff, they've had cuts. So the Department of Agriculture, I mean, you go down to the Department of Interior, you go down a long list. Pretty much they've all had cuts. The Department of Defense has taken some cuts, pretty small cuts, but nonetheless, there have been cuts on the discretionary spending side. The two areas where we really need to focus is we need to connect our tax policy to deficit reduction and also our spending policy to deficit reduction. Just not too long ago, someone on the House side, they offered a budget that did all these cuts, but it didn't affect the deficit. And the reason it didn't is because they also offered a bunch of tax cuts to go with it. You know, we have to be sensible and reasonable about this and work through this. And the one thing that no one wants to talk about is we need to do entitlement reform as well. That's where the big money and the big budget items are in the federal budget. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be easy. It's going to make the American people nervous and some, to some extent, upset when we go in there and start changing some entitlements. But, you know, we have to. They're unsustainable right now. And I think the American people send us to Washington to make these hard decisions. They may get upset with us when we have to make them because they may not, you know, it may be kind of painful for everybody. But that's where we are, and that's what we need to do as a nation. And the other thing is this. Let me just say this last thing to your listeners on that topic. I think if you look at America today, we have a lot of really good things going for us. We don't always talk about it. I don't buy into the doom and gloom that a lot of the prognosticators talk about. We have a lot of good things going for us. One of them is, in my lifetime, we're as close as we've ever been to energy independence. That's been a goal for a long time, but you can kind of see where we're going here with natural gas and a lot of the domestic drilling. We're actually moving that way, and there's a lot of other, you know, American manufacturing jobs are coming back and a lot of other things. I would say this. I think we are one big budget deal away from restoring America's global preeminence, and I think we need to do everything we can, do all we can right after this election's over to get that big budget deal we need. It would be a huge signal to the rest of the world that America's back and we're ready to lead and we've got our act together. And, you know, we're going to sacrifice. It's not going to be easy here in this country to get our budget where it needs to be. And it's going to take, you know, 10 or 20 years to get down to a balanced budget and all that kind of stuff, get our debt taken care of. But we're going to do it, and we're committed to do it. And if we can send that signal to the world, I think very, very good things will happen in this country.
Just about a minute left. I wanted to talk about the farm bill, where we are on that. This is a particularly critical time in which, you know, agriculture is in the headlines as drought conditions continue across the nation, including here at Arkansas, and that's driving prices up on some staple crops.
Well, drought is a huge deal. Obviously, last week, Governor Beebe said he was going to ask for drought declaration, and I kind of spearheaded the effort with the congressional delegation. We all signed on to a letter, got it over to Secretary Vilsack. Literally that day, we got it to him at noon. That afternoon, he declared the disaster. It's one of the few times that the federal government's done something in less than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. But I was glad we all worked together and did that, and I appreciate Governor Beebe's leadership. So we did that. We all, and that's going to continue. We're just going to have to watch this. There are some people that are concerned this is going to be the worst drought since 1980. I hope it's not, but it depends on the weather. And then you have the farm bill. The House is trying to get the farm bill through the House right now, and sounds like that's far from being over, but hopefully they'll get that through, you know, relatively soon, and we'll get a farm bill, and we'll be set up for the next 5 years on agriculture.
All right. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. U.S. Senator Mark Pryor joining us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition.